So today, we're going to focus on one very important object that you will find in quantum field theory, which is the correlation function, or the n-bond function, if you want, and the notion of generating functional. So the first step will be to kind of, so this is the object we want to consider. Okay, we're here, we have this Heisenberg operator for different times. And we look at the expectation value of this time ordered object on the vacuum state. Okay, so here this is different from, it's not x equals zero, it's really the vacuum state. So the first step is to write this as a path integral. Then we're going to see that indeed as a path integral it's going to be something of this form. So you have this, still this measure. And then you will have just the product of this function evaluated at different times. And we're going to see that kind of the time ordering is going to be done automatically. So in the path integral. So here, if I consider the real time, it's going to be something like this. So then the idea is that indeed, we can introduce a generating functional as a path integral that we know how to compute exactly. And where here it will be described, so we won't have this term, and the new action will be, so the action that we start with, and the idea is to add this source term to define. Okay, so this is, then of course the main motivation is usually, so right now you don't really know how to compute that exactly, this object as a path integral, but if now you remove all this x and you have this action where you just have this source term, the question is, can you compute that exactly? Okay, and then there will be two cases. Of course, the first case is just, yes, we can do it. So then you just have this object exactly. Otherwise, if it's a no, usually this means that ideally we will rewrite our Hamiltonian as a free one plus a perturbation. And so at this stage, if we are here, then we go to perturbation theory and do what we did yesterday. Okay, so there are different cases, and then once we have the functional derivative, when we have the generating functional, the idea is that you obtain this object by acting with functional derivative on it. So either you will get something exact if this object, you know how to compute it exactly, or you will get as a perturbative expansion. Okay, and this is usually at this stage that you will see what you call the Feynman diagrams appearing. Okay, so this is the idea for today. So we're going to go step by step. So the first step is kind of to really define this object as a path integral. And yeah, so the idea is also to, so the way we introduced the path integral was to start from the Schrödinger picture. So here you see that I'm talking about Heisenberg operators. So we need to kind of make the connection between the two pictures here. So this is the first step. So so we want to find the path integral representation for correlation function. And as a first step, we are not going to focus on the vacuum expectation value, vacuum to vacuum expectation value. We're just going to consider as the initial and final state an arbitrary state and see how we can extract from that the ground state. Okay. So the first step is to kind of recast this path integral in terms of Heisenberg representation object. Okay, so let's consider now So this is, we are now in the Heisenberg picture. So let me introduce the eigenstate of this operator. Okay, so here, these are the eigenstate of my Heisenberg operator. So be careful here. What is this T denote? It's not, it's really what I'm talking about. It's the instantaneous eigenstate. So it just, when the position is merged at a given time, okay, x, then it's parameterized by CCT, but it has to be distinguished from the dynamical time dependence of a wave function, okay? So here, it's different from the dynamical time dependence of, wave function or a state in the Schrödinger picture. And that this would be Schrödinger. Okay. And so the relation with the time independent eigenstate is like, what you have is that again, be careful, the sign here, it's really a plus, it's not a minus. So I let you try to prove that by, you can just start from here, use the fact that this is a Heisenberg operator, meaning that you can go to x at time zero acting with this time evolution operator, it's inverse, okay? And then show that indeed this is the relation that you have. So I let, I'll check it at least, maybe it's not really a proof. Just by using the fact that, you can x of t, again, is, x is 0. Okay, so now let's, so what is the path integral that we know is, so this was just to introduce this state. So we use the path integral to find a representation of the propagator. Okay, so let's write again the propagator and try to write it in terms of this new state. So here, this is just my propagator from time zero position x to position x prime to time t. And by definition, this is just the matrix element between so x and x prime of my time evolution operator. Sorry. And so how can I write this in terms of this new state? Do you see that are now labeled by time as a, just as a parameterization? So here, of course, this is going to define the x prime t. So is it, no, I was using, and on the other side, I'm at time zero. Okay, so I can also, and so now this, propagator that I know how to write as the path integral is written in terms of kind of object in the Heisenberg picture. Okay, so this is kind of simple. So with that, now we can go to the simplest correlation function, which will be only with two terms here. Okay, and let's see. So first, I'm going to consider for any arbitrary final or initial state, and then we're going to see how we can extract the ground state contribution. Okay, so any questions first on that? No, that's fine. Okay, so let's, so now, yeah, maybe I can just, so this K that is now can be written is, as a path integral is just simply where you need to sum over all possible paths that satisfies the given condition, boundary condition. Okay, we're here. I'm just because I wanted to go to the Heisenberg picture for some time, I'm using real time. Okay, so there is no, but you know that everything we did, you can re-go to real time by doing the inverse weak rotation. So, okay, so now let's look at the simplest two-point function, okay, the simplest correlation function, which is a two-point function, and try to find what is its representation in terms of the path integral. So the object I want to consider is now where this is a time order operator that I recall you the definition yesterday between, so what was my state, x and zero. Yeah, okay, so maybe the notation with this big T, yeah, so this is just my time, this is a time ordering operator. So I'm using the same letter, but with the context, you should understand what I'm talking about, hopefully. But yeah, maybe I should have chosen, I'm going to keep this notation just because otherwise I'm sure I'm going to get confused at some point. So let's, so let's look at this object. Okay, so here it's not yet what we really want. It's not from vacuum to vacuum. It's from some arbitrary state, but we're going to see then later on how to extract the ground state contribution, the vacuum contribution. So first, let's suppose, because, yeah, we want this time ordering, so we can first suppose that T1 is greater than T2, and then we do the other case and see what this means, okay? So here, what do we have? This means that now I can get rid of I know the relation between T1 and T2, so I can get rid of this operator, okay? So this is simply x T1 x T2 acting on this object. Now what I want to do is, as we did before, kind of introduce some identity resolution between the different objects. Okay, so here now I'm going to get an integration over, I'm going to introduce two, so one here and one here, because so the idea is that where T1 is fixed here. So now I'm acting with this operator. Then here I want to have the x2. I'm going to keep the product in fact. Okay, so the idea here is to make obvious the eigenstate of this operator at this given instantaneous time T2 or T1. Okay, T1 and T2 here are fixed. Okay, and then x0. Okay, so here I just introduce two resolution of identity here to make obvious this eigenstate of my given operator at given time. Okay, so now I'm just using the fact that here, by definition, this is x1 t1, this is my state. And here I got x2. So I can simplify things, and what I get is that I have an integration over x1, x2. Now I have this x1, x2 that are just number, and I still have to deal with this from t, x1, t1, x1, t1, x2, t2. And then x2, t2, x0. Okay, so what are these objects now? How can I write them? Yeah, so I can write them as path integral, okay? So I have the combination of three past integral. So going from zero x at time zero to x2 at time t2, etc. Okay. So here I can write this. So these are my propagators. I can use that. Okay. So let's write maybe here. This will be x2. So I keep this x1. x2, my two numbers, but now I have this three path integral where here, sometimes I'm forgetting about the condition on the path, but here let's write them explicitly because we're going to. So here you want that the final time is at x prime, and at time t1, you're at x1. And this is just then the usual path integral integration. And here you get your action, okay? Then you get the second one that is going to be the path integral for all path going from, so x at t2 has to be x2, and the final time is t1, and x at t1 is x1, okay? So you just combine all your path, and x as 0 now is x, and x2, x at t2 is x2. Okay, so it's kind of a huge, large expression, but it's going to. So you have a first, so you have a product of three path integral. The first from initial position x. So here you have this kind of. What are we doing? So we start at time t, that is zero. We have a first path until t2. And then a second path until t1, and a third path until big T. And so we have this combination of three paths. But you see that here we have an arbitrary position at x2 and x1. So we're going to sum over all possible one. Okay, so at the end, we indeed sum over all possible paths going from at t0, x is fixed, and x prime is fixed at t. But we can, this any path now can be decomposed. So the idea is that the full path integral is any path, you sum over all paths starting from here to here. But you can divide all your path in three different paths, and then you just have to say that this U sum over all possible x prime, x2, and x1, okay? So this is exactly what we're doing here. So we can really, since we are really integrating over all x1 and x2, this means that we can really combine this three path integral into just one, where here we want to keep track that at x1 is x at t1 and x2 is x at t2, okay? So we can rewrite this path integral as so what we get is that x t x as a path integral can be seen as only one path integral where you sum over all possible paths starting from x0 is x and x prime, x of t is x prime. Where now x1 and x2 are xt1 and xt2, they're just number. And this, we prove it for t1 greater than t2. And you could convince yourself that if now you suppose that t2 is now greater than t1, okay, it was the other case, then you will get the final. So this is for you to check it. What you get is the same result. Okay, so what does it mean? It means that indeed this time, this path integral is doing the time ordering automatically. Okay? Yeah, sorry, Rick.
What happened in this last line here where you had the three, the two integrals dx1, dx2, and the three path integrals, and then everything became a different?
Yeah. So you agree that, so let's go back to this middle black ground. Okay, so what are we saying here? Okay, we're saying that we start from x0x, okay, here, then we go to a intermediate point at time t2, so t2 is fixed, and we denote this position x2, okay? This is the path integral, so this means that we're considering all possible paths that go from x to x2, okay, at this stage. Then what are we doing? We go from x2 from this point at time. So only t2 is fixed here a priori. But x2 is now, yeah, let's say that x2 is also to another intermediate point at t1, that is x1. Again, it's a path integral. So what does it mean, really, what we're doing? Is that here we're really summing over all possible paths between these two points, okay? And then we do the same thing from t1 to big T, okay? Now, the point is that, so these are two numbers that so we don't, right now, we don't care about them right now, is that we are summing over all, we integrating over x1 and x2. Meaning that here, when I was saying that x1 and x2 are fixed value, then you fix them, but then you take all possible of them, okay? So at the end, what are we doing? What are we, which path are we considering? It's all possible paths from x at t0 and x prime at t, okay? Because you see that on all of this interval, we're really considering all possible paths. They are adding themselves, but now this point is also taking any value, so we're really considering all possible paths from this point to this point, okay? So that's why the idea is that, so if we didn't have that, you agree that this could be really written as just what I wrote here, as the path integral. Now it just, you have some number x1, x2 that are, because of this boundary condition, you know that it's this t1 and t2 are still fixed, okay? So it has to be the value of x at t1, and it's the value of x at t2. So you can still add them, and, okay? So this is the idea. So you really, yeah. And what is kind of nice is that indeed if now you change the order of t2 and t1 here, then of course the path that you will consider here will be with a t1 here and a t2 here, okay? But the point is that to be able to combine them as a unique path, okay, you really need to have that the order between the t is respected, otherwise you cannot combine them as a unique path. So really, this is why we can say then this time ordering is done automatically, okay? It's because it's like if you're able to write your three path integral as only one, this means that they combine in such a way that your time ordering is done. Okay, so as soon as you wrote this object here implicitly, you have like you took into account your path your time ordering. Okay, any more question? So then you could generalize this for any n to the case n larger than 2. And so then you get, so this is still for arbitrary starting initial and final point. And so what you get is just really you going to sum over all possible, you're going to have the path integral on for all possible paths starting from x prime to x, from x to x prime during the time interval t. And now you will have a product and of course here, we started again with an expression in terms of operator. So operator means, they won't have to commute. Okay. So that's why you have to specify an order. So we choose the time ordering here. But now when you are at the path integral formulation, it's only classical function, okay? So this is commuting. So the order here is not important. It's just that you have this product at different times. Okay, but it's not, so you, that's why you don't need any t or anything. Here you're really dealing with classical function. We get rid of the notion of operators, where here, of course, you have to, if they are not taking at the same time, it doesn't mean that x of t1 times x of t2 is the same thing as x of t2 times x of t1. Okay, so this was the first step. Now we have an expression of, not completely yet, but we will do the, go the, to the ground, the vacuum contribution a bit later. Let me go to the kind of notion of generating functional, at least for this object. How can we write, okay? So you see that here, if you imagine that now you know how to compute the path integral for the given S, let's say that it's a quadratic Lagrangian, then now that you have the x, you don't really, even if it's quadratic, you don't know how to compute it explicitly, okay? So the idea is to introduce, again, a source term to your function, and then see that indeed the x can go down if you do some differential functional derivative with respect to g on your function that you will be able to compute, okay? Of course, then the question will be if s is not defined in terms of a quadratic Lagrangian, then we will have to go to perturbative theory. But even for a quadratic Lagrangian at this stage, with all this product of x, it's not obvious how to compute it if we don't go to this notion of generating functional. So let's go to step two, even if we are not completely done with step one, because here it's not yet the vacuum state. But so the idea is, now let's say that I want to consider, yeah, we're going to say use really the same trick as yesterday for perturbation theory, even if in this case this can be applied to an action that for a system that you know how to solve exactly. Okay, so here the idea is that we want to consider this action where, so you start with your action that usually is written in terms of kinematical term, potential, and then you want to add your source term. Okay, so this is what I'm going to call S of J. And then the transition amplitude in the presence of the source, here this is, so if you're interested in this object, which is simply x of zero, but here it's with it will be with the Hamiltonian that take into account, which has the source term. Okay, so this is what this means here, the J subscript. So this would be as a path integral, we see that this is simply a path integral, so it just where here of course you need to take right explicitly the boundary condition. And if you take the functional derivative of this object now with respect to J, then let's take just one. It's going to be no. With respect to J at a given time T of this object written as a path integral, you see that what is going to go out, so you're still within the path integral, but in, from your exponential, what you're going to get is I over H bar time X of T. And you keep and so here, if you're, yeah, you can easily take higher functional derivative for different J at different time here. And you see obviously that you're going to get exactly what you're looking for. Okay, so this is the idea. So here the idea is that in case we know how to compute this, this path integral without J, then we know how to compute it also with J, okay? And then from this path integral, we can easily get the path integral for the correlation function. Okay, so this is really the idea we want to use. Of course, then there is a question, if S is not defined, if this is not just quadratic, okay, if it's not only the harmonic oscillator, or if it's not just zero, then we don't know how to compute, and then we need to go to the perturbation theory at this level to have, and we won't have an exact expression of K, but we just have a perturbative expansion of it. But still, we can use the perturbation expansion of K to do this trick and get a perturbation expansion of this object. Okay? So here we have, but this is, my point is that we can use that even if you know how to solve exactly this, this object. Okay, so let's maybe write explicitly then the relation we were looking for. So we still had for arbitrary state, x prime t of k1 tn x0. So here, if you kind of use minus I h bar to the power n of times this object to get rid of that, okay? K1 sorry, GTN on KJ, that is just with the right boundary condition. So x prime, x of 0 is x of t is x prime. Okay, so this is what I call KJ. And then, of course, you want to recover S, the S of your system, so you then plug, J equal to 0. Okay, so this is the relation we are interested. So we kind of, so we have this for arbitrary state as a path integral. We kind of have what we would call the equivalent of the generating functional, even if usually in the literature, the generating functional will be the one for the vacuum here. Then we kind of put on the side this question, if we know to compute that exactly or not. But we've seen that then acting with functional derivative on this object, we get the path integral we want, okay? So before going back to this object, to this question, if we can compute this exactly or not, of course we will have to choose the specifics. To answer this question, then you have to choose a specific system, okay? Let's try to really see how we can get the vacuum contribution.
Yeah.
And for that, well, hopefully it's not going to confuse you too much. I've decided to go back to the Euclidean picture, meaning do the weak rotation again, just because, to extract the vacuum contribution, if you remember yesterday what we did was to find what was the ground state energy, okay? So the vacuum contribution is the state associated with the ground state energy. And to do that, we took like the limit beta, or if you want big T, was going to infinity, okay? The issue here, if we want to do this kind of limit is, and to show it explicitly that it's working, is that, yeah, we have this I. So it's kind of, we can do it, but it's a bit tricky. So it's much cleaner if we go to the Euclidean picture, and then you can anyway go back to this real-time picture, okay? So by Euclidean, I mean when you do the weak rotation. Okay, so any question here? Okay, so here the idea is we kind of have this step, but for, so we let this step on the side, and we go back to this one to really find the vacuum contribution, okay? And then what does it mean it's at the level of the path integral, and what would be the generating function? Okay, so by analogy, you can really define. So now we go back kind of to point one. And the idea is how to extract the vacuum contribution from this arbitrary state we're starting with. Okay, so this is our point. So now by analogy, I'm going to define the Euclidean, it means that we did the weak rotation. Endpoint and so the way I'm doing it now, it's not the same way that will be in the lecture that I need to still post. So we're going to choose as boundary condition some periodic one, or like symmetric one if you want. Well, again, my, yeah, beta is h bar beta is big T, if you want. So now we're back to this tau, and we have the same object as before. Now it's the Euclidean action. So I don't have I anymore. So here I've chosen as final initial time minus beta over 2 and final time beta over 2. Okay, and we can still relate that even if so to operators, to an expression in terms of operators. Okay, so this would mean that we have, instead of this Heisenberg operator, we have a kind of equivalent. So it's still possible to relate that to an expression with operator. And so let me maybe, so here I remind you that we said that this Heisenberg state, we're here again, this is not the dynamical time, was equal to okay, so now if we perform the weak rotation, we can introduce kind of this object that will be h tau. And if we were looking at the dual, okay, so the Cartesian, then this is equal to minus I H T. And so the dual ket here would be X tau is just minus H. Okay, so all this thing is to kind of be able to do a limit easily. So now this is indeed equal to beta h to h of this equivalent, this operator, where now we did this kind of weak rotation. Still time. So let me comment on what I wrote here. So what is this object here? So it's really the equivalent of what we had here with x and 0, except it's x minus beta 2. And it's for the Euclidean, the imaginary time. So here it's indeed using this definition. You see that this is really just another way to write x prime minus beta 2. Okay, so you really have, and this is x prime prime beta 2. Okay, so it's really the same expression except that we have this t. But it's interesting to put these things out, and we're going to see why. So here the idea, is that this operator are defined as by continuation to the imaginary time of the Heisenberg feature position operation. Okay. So now, what is the transition amplitude? So we have this state. We want to find the transition amplitude between the vacuum, or between ground state. So yesterday, what we have seen is that we could extract the ground state by taking the limit beta goes to infinity. Okay, in the propagator. So let maybe, so now, we really want to deal with this question. So this is just a reminder that maybe it's going to justify what we're doing from yesterday. Is that, we found taking the limit beta goes to infinity, we were able to extract the ground energy, okay? And indeed, if from the starting from the propagator. So let me rewrite what was the expression, is that indeed the propagator can be written in terms of the so this is the definition, and then the idea that we did yesterday is that you can look at the representation of this object on the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. So then you get, if you look at the limit, beta goes to zero infinity, so let's write it explicitly. You get that the first term is going to be the eigen, so the zero here is for the n equals zero. And then you have this e minus beta e zero divided by h bar. So this is the main contribution. So it's one plus a big tau of an exponential of minus beta e one minus e zero divided by h bar. So you see that here, so let me maybe pull that up that everyone can see. Okay, so this is just the definition of this propagator between the two. So this is, could be arbitrary, but I just choose zero for simplicity. Then the idea is that if you look at, if you now introduce identity resolution using the eigenstate of H, you can expand that this way. So this is just the dominant term, okay? E0 is the ground state. And you can see that indeed when beta is much bigger than E1 minus E0 divided by H bar, okay? Meaning that beta goes to infinity, then this is going to zero, okay? So you can really see the time evolution operator that act like a projector on the ground state, okay? So this is this idea we want to use here. That's why I wrote this expression. I put explicitly the, this is the time evolution operator to make, to see what, how we get the ground state here. Okay, so any, is that clear? This was what we did yesterday. Now I just want you use this idea to get the ground state. Okay, so the idea is to look at this object that I wrote here in the limit beta goes to infinity. So we want now to kind of do the same thing, but for the correlator. And look at the limit beta goes to infinity of what I wrote just here. Beta h bar, and then one. Now n, and I'm still missing epsilon minus beta h on x. Or if I was using x prime. Okay, so I just rewrote this. So now, what is this thing that you can decompose that on the eigen basis of h again? So what you get is that this is en divided by 2 h bar with x prime prime on, so maybe let's put this n, you sum over n, and this is just what I called yesterday. So this is for this side, so we keep that now. And on the other side, we have the same. So let's put another label, let k, exponential of minus beta ek to H bar, and here I have now K X prime. Okay, so this again is my eigenstate, the wave function. So label with K evaluated at X prime. So now, since we take the limit, we just consider the dominant term when beta goes to zero, to infinity, sorry. So what do we get here? It's when n and k are equal to zero, both of them. So here, we indeed get that this is zero. This has to be careful. It's not x equals zero. This is really the vacuum. Okay, or if you want, it's the n and m equals zero. So the dominant term is n or k equals zero. So this is what you get here. Because here I'm missing, of course, this n. And on this side, I'm missing the k. Then I keep my object of interest. These are still operators. So I'm here not yet at the path integral description. And this is multiplied by this object, but it's just a number. And X prime. Okay, so these two numbers here, from n and k equals zero, time exponential of minus beta e zero divided by h bar, coming from these two contributions. And then I get the same thing as before, one plus some other contribution that are going to be not relevant when beta goes to infinity, because you have e one minus e zero divided by h bar. Okay, so really, okay, so now the question, we are back to point one. So we are not even at the level of the path integral, but how to get the correlator from vacuum to vacuum state, okay? And I have it here. Okay, so this is now still in terms of operators.
I was just wondering, so on your first line here, when you're taking a limit in your time, the x's, they all have like a subscript f?
No, it's e, sorry, yeah. Here?
Yeah.
It's e for, meaning that it's the Euclidean operator, meaning that it's like you need to do the continuation of your Heisenberg operator to the imaginary part, because we did the weak rotation, so you just make the distinction. Then you go back to, again, it's just because it's much easier here to take this limit, beta goes to zero, whereas if I add an I here, then you need to take your kind of weird limit to go to the real plan and everything. So it's easier to take the limit in this picture, so that's why I did that here. Yeah, you had a question?
This is for gap system. Can we have a method for gapless system?
Sorry, it's for what?
Gap system. There's a finite energy gap between the ground state.
Yeah. You could generate that for, like, if it's not a discrete spectrum of energy. Yeah.
But if we have a gapless system,
you still have the ground. By definition, your ground energy is lowest than the other. So you will have, like,
if there's a continuum, then we cannot do this approximation.
So you can write everything. Write the limit if it's a continuous spectrum. So all the decomposition in terms here won't be the sum, it will be with an integration and everything. Then, the limit. think it should, yeah, maybe it's not, you don't go this way then. What is still valid for sure, you can still decompose this object on the eigenstate and eigenvalue. Then, yeah, the limit, yeah, I'm not sure for the limit, I would have to check again. Okay, so let's maybe just right now. So the idea is, so we're almost there. We still have a factor here. So the idea is that we're going to use kind of normalization to get rid of this factor. So now I'm going to say that and then we'll be able to write this as a path integral easily. Okay, so then now we have our object, still in terms of operators, but with the, all the work we did before, we see that it's easy to. So this is just to remind you that we are in the weak rotation thing. So it's given by limit when beta goes to infinity of this object. So I'm just rewritten what we have. I'm sorry. Age bar acting on X prime, and to get rid of here, we kind of have a proportionality coefficient. So to get rid of it, we kind of normalize by. H or H bar X prime prime. Okay, and all these objects, we know how to write them as path integral. The fact that we're taking the limit beta goes to infinity can be also implemented directly in the path integral. Okay, so now we can conclude on step one and just, and so this object is usually called the Feynman correlator. Oh, and one remark that indeed, so here this is the vacuum state. Okay, so you don't have any, you know, the path integral is written from path starting from a given point to a finite point, initial point to final point. But here you don't have, it's totally independent of what you could choose here as X prime and X prime prime. Okay, you see that this X prime prime appear in the, in this proportionality coefficient, but then when we normalize, we get rid of it as expected from this expression where you don't see anything. So this means that within the path integral, we kind of choose the boundary condition that we want. And so now as a path integral, what we have is both this object can be written as path integral. And so I keep explicit the limit here, but you can really implement it in your definition of, you know, where is the beta or the time appearing in the path integral formulation? It's in the definition of your action. Your action is the integral of dt or d tau from initial time to final time. Okay, so that what we are saying now is that this action here is going to be the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity of d tau or dt, depending on the picture you want to use. But so let's keep it explicit here. So here we just have, just because I want to mention the different choice of boundary conditions that you can use that are like that are standard, so you will recover this kind of vocabulary. So this is the same, and here we just divide by okay, so really the beta goes to infinity. You can implement it in this, the way you define your actions here. But so here you kind of, because this is at the end independent of x prime and x prime prime, this implies that here you can really choose your boundary condition. And so we have the choice of x prime equal x prime prime equal zero that are called the Dirichlet boundary condition. And the usual standard one is to choose periodic one. So x beta final time is equal to x at the initial time. Okay, and these are called the periodic boundary condition. Okay, so we kind of done with point one for this part. So now what is the generating functional if we deal with this object? Let me check.
I don't understand why the object that you wrote in the numerator is, how is it different from the one above? Because I thought we were doing the vacuum contribution only, so.
No, so here you see that it was easier to define my object. I defined it between the initial state and final state. So my initial state is x zero, so it's just an x prime t prime. X prime t is the final state. These are arbitrary here, okay? And why did I choose to start like this? Is because really, what is the path integral? Sorry, excuse me. For the path integral, you really need the notion of your path starting from an initial point to final point. And this is really given by what you have on the right and left of this object, okay? So to start to find kind of a path integral representation, and also to do this, to show you like how the time ordering is taken, I choose arbitrary initial point and final point. But what is different with the vacuum is that this zero is not the zero in the position representation. It's the zero in the energy representation, okay? So it's kind of, that's why it's kind of a bit tricky to go to this state in the path integral, because the path integral naturally implements the position representation. And so that's why we had to use what we did yesterday, that indeed the energy can be extracted when you go to a certain limit, using the fact that you can really see your time evolution operator as a kind of projector on your ground state when you go to beta goes to infinity, and use that to find the vacuum. So now this zero is not x equals zero, it's really the energy level, the first energy level, okay, the ground state of your system.
But what became of the position wave function, sorry, that wave function part, why is it not?
So that's why then we, because if you look at the same thing here, if you do the same, you could do the same thing and it would be just the same object without that, okay, but you will still have the same numerical factor.
Normalized.
Yeah, so you normalize them, so you get rid of them, and it's kind of nice. It's what you kind of expected, that indeed this, you can check that all the x prime and x prime prime dependence is really in this normalization factor, and that you get rid of it when you normalize, as you would expect, because if I'm just giving you this expression in terms of operators, you won't see why you would have an initial point and final point. What does it mean? And so that's why then we really have the choice of boundary conditions. So here I just gave you the two usual ones that you will find in the literature that are useful at some point. Yeah. So we haven't talked yet about this part, how to compute this exactly. But again, it's going to be something computing some green function stuff. And so again, to have explicitly the green function, you need to choose some boundary condition here. So yeah, this is kind of the choice, the simplest choice you can have, and the one that you will find in the literature usually. So yeah, this is a good point. I really started from an object that is not an expectation value from vacuum to vacuum, just because within the path integral, this vacuum state is not really naturally encoded. At least it's not, you need to take this kind of, this limit, okay? So it's, because really what we have in the path integral is this notion of path. So a path is well-defined in terms of initial point and final point. This is usually what is fixed. So here, when we go to this this new object, then we don't need them, we don't need them anymore. Okay, so let's, thanks for your question. Okay, so now this is the object we are interested in. So let's go to point two for this given object that now we have. Yeah, again, this correlation function, this apron function, are really important object that you will have in quantum field theory. You will see in quantum field theory. But already you can imagine that if you have access to all the polynomial in X, as you see as operator, then this means that you have access to mainly all the function of your that you're interested in, okay? So you really have all the physical information of your system. Okay, so now let's go to point two. So really the notion of generating functional for this endpoint function from vacuum to vacuum. And since I already did kind of show you what was the functional, the generating function for when it was for between arbitrary state, it's kind of really the same. So we're just going to, the only ingredient we need is we take into account a normalization. So we want that z of j equals 0 is going to be equal to 1. So for that, we're going to define it as a quotient now. We're here. We just take that this is really, yeah, so I can go back to, well, I'm going back to real time. Sorry for. This is my, again, it's the same thing as I did before, except that now you have to be careful is that the, here it's going to minus infinity to plus infinity as well as in the definition of the action, okay? Because you took this limit. Divided by, sorry, the same thing without the, okay, so here we took into the normalization is that j equals 0 is equal to 1. And if you want to write this, because here it's from minus infinity to plus infinity, in terms of your vacuum state, this is kind of the vacuum state, but for the action defined in terms of g, divided by the normalized but when j equals 0. And then how do you get, so this is 0.3, so we directly go to 0.4. Let's say that we know how to compute this object exactly. Then we can go to 0.4 directly, and what we get is that acting with some functional derivative on this object, as before, you recover this thing, okay? So here, and we already took into account the normalization. And I guess I'm forgetting about the H bar here. Well, I'll let you put correctly the H bar, but I think I forgot to write 1 over I Tn acting on this generating functional, and then plugging j equal to 0, then this is indeed, if you do that on this at this level, what you get each time that you act with a functional derivative at j, with j, you end up with the x, okay? So here you really get the product of the x time still the action, but now with j equals 0, okay? We implemented the j equals 0, divided by the path integral . So it's exactly what I wrote above. The limit here is taken by the fact that s is dt or minus infinity plus infinity. Okay, so the time is infinite here. And then this is exactly what is our function of interest, meaning the endpoint function. So what does it mean? It means that here, if this object, so the correlation, the generating functional is known, then you easily have access to any endpoint function, okay? So the question is now how to compute this object, and this is question 3, and this is what I want to do. Okay, so any questions before? So I'm not going to do all the steps, but let's assume that we know. So to compute, so the question now is about this object, okay? Because you see that if you know it, then you get all correlation function that you need. Okay, so of course, we need to specify what is the system. So let's first say that we consider the harmonic oscillator as an example. Then in this case, the technique to compute this generating functional is very similar to the one that we used yesterday, or you used in the tutorial 2 days ago to get what was called. So then it's very similar. So when you compute this function for the harmonic oscillator. Okay, because here what it is, it's indeed the propagator for the harmonic oscillator with a source term. So here the question, if this is harmonic oscillator, this means that your action here is harmonic oscillator 1, and you add a source term, okay? and you do the path integral from, you compute the path integral of that. So it's very similar to what you did to get this object. Then the only difference are the boundary condition that you consider, okay? So, so indeed, if you compute it, maybe one difference that you should notice is if here, so here I'm back to real time, okay? When you computed this object, in the tutorial, it was with Euclidean time, or meaning that it was imaginary time. So you only had to deal with Gaussian or anything. Here, you will have to be careful when you have to compute the green function. It's still a green function, but it's going to be a different prescription. So I really encourage you to try to do it in this setting. I wrote in the lecture note some int. Because here, what you would get, and I'm just giving you this result, because to show you why it is so important to know this green function. So what you will get is that indeed, again, as before, so now it's from minus infinity to plus infinity, because it's the new boundary condition we want, but we have this. And we have this green function here. Okay, so this is the green function. So let me just remind you how it is defined. So for the harmonic oscillator, it's a green function of the operator. Of this operator, meaning that you want this, so it's like this is supposed to be the inverse of this operator. So you want a delta function here. And here you need to add some boundary condition. So usually we consider the Dirichlet boundary condition. So you will have so let me maybe call this one T1. Then you have boundary condition, so you need to consider, so this one is zero, and the initial one, T prime, so if T prime and T prime prime are your initial and final time, okay? And then doing the correct prescription where you need to introduce this I epsilon thing, you will find that T0, but this is something, yeah. Do it explicitly. Okay, so this is your problem. This is supposed to be your solution, but yeah, check that you get indeed the solution yourself. So now you see that compared to before, you get an I here that you didn't add before, and then you get this. Well, omega is just, the usual omega. Okay, so why is it so important to know this green function? So now let's have a look at the, so this would be the solution. We have a solution for Z of J, so the generating functional in the case of the harmonic oscillator, okay? Now, this means that we have access to all the endpoint functions. So let's look at the simplest one again. So what about the two-point function now? So the two-point function is just obtained by twice this functional derivative here. So here you get that t of t prime between this zero thing is going to be given, so you need to act twice on with h bar. Again, I reintroduce the h bar that I have T1, and the same thing with j evaluated at T2. okay, acting on your Z of J and putting J equal to zero. Okay, so sorry, this is another story. Okay, so if you do that, okay, this is quite simple to check that what you will get is you have still a factor I, H, or M, I think, but then you get this green function for, so the zero here just means that we are, it's for the harmonic oscillator in case we want to do it later, between T prime, T and T prime, sorry, I have some mind. Okay, so what does it mean here is that your top two-point function is your green function, okay? So if you know your green function, you know your two-point function, and once we have the two-point function, in fact, you can deduce any higher endpoint function thanks to the Vick theorem. So let's write this theorem that is the fundamental one that you're going to use also in quantum field theory. So the idea is now you have the two-point function. How do you get endpoint functions? And so we have the two-point function. How do we go to n-point function? This is theorem, which tell you that the n-point function, so that I'm going to call g, not to rewrite all the time thing, but by this I just mean that this, indeed, this is this object, okay? So I'm just introducing this notation here. And the g is going to see that it's kind of justified by the fact that, indeed, we kind of get the green function. So, if n is odd, and I let you check why this is the case, it's very simple, just because you have this, then you get that gn okay, because, and this is simply coming from the fact that your generating functional is even, okay, in J. So when you take the limit J equals to zero, after having computing the derivative, you will always get, if N is odd, you will always get a zero here. And this is even. Then you get that here, this can be seen, written as a product of the two-point function. So if you want, these are the same thing as the green function, where now you're going to consider all permutation. Yeah, let me introduce. So these are all two-point function. N minus one. Where here I'm considering P in the group of permutation of n element. Okay, where here the permutation, yeah, so the permutation differing just by the commutation in a within a pair are identified. Okay, so if I have same thing here, these are the same thing. Or if you exchange just two pairs, it's also identified. So here the number of elements this contains n minus 1, and it's a double factorial, meaning that this is equal to n minus 1, n minus 3, and at the end you get 3 times 1 elements. And so here, what is also interesting is that at this stage, so you see that, yeah, if you're able to get the Green function, then you get the two-point function, then you get any n-point function. Okay, so this is kind of super powerful here, and we can have a graphical notation at this stage, and then I'm going to do one example, and then so I may take 5 minutes more today, sorry. So you have two kind of objects in this. You need two kind of objects, and then you can deduce any graph. So yeah, let's say 2 g of 2 d tau. So this kind of thing can be represented just as a vertex with a line that is not finished. And the second kind of thing will be just when you have an element like this, tau 1, tau 2, then this is just two vertices. One is tau 1, the other one is tau 2. Okay, so that are obtained. So this kind of thing are obtained when you act with your functional derivative on the exponent. Okay, so on the exponent of the exponential that you have here. And then this one is obtained when you will act with your covariant functional derivative on this kind of term, on the term A. Okay? So let's do maybe one example on that. Because it maybe seems and then I just want to have 5 minutes to tell you if instead of the harmonic oscillator, you have something you don't know to compute, and then it's going to be the conclusion. Okay, so let's, for example, do the four-point correlator. So meaning that I want G4 of T1, T2, T3, T4. So how many terms should I get? Now n equal 4. So how many terms do I have?
Three.
Yeah, 3. Okay. Well, let's call them this term. Okay, and so let's just choose one first pairing. And then I need to permute that, but permuting this pair with this pair is the same thing, and permuting these two elements within each pair are the same thing, okay? So what are the other two elements that I have?
One, tau 3, tau 2, tau 4.
Yeah, this is 1. And then I'm missing 1.
Tau 1, tau 4, tau 3.
Yeah, tau 1, tau 4. And tau 2, tau 3. And so now I could have also write quickly the diagrammatic representation of this. So this term is like tau 1. So 2, tau 2, tau 3, tau 4. Then I get to tau 1, tau 3, tau 2, tau 4, plus, so now it's crossing tau 1, tau 4, 3. So get this thing. Oh. Okay, so this is kind of an important theorem. So I'm going to conclude in a minute. So now the question is, there's something that I want to tell you, is if the system we're considering is not the harmonic oscillator anymore, but so if we go to a system where V is of the form okay, meaning that this could be quadratic, so it can be the harmonic oscillator. But these are contributions that are of higher order in X, for example. So then how do you deal with that? Because the question is, you still want to get to know this object, okay? To get your correlation function. And so here, this means that your action will be of the form S0, where it's a harmonic oscillator, plus Si of x, that can be just written as lambda d tau omega the x. And so here, if you want to determine this, you cannot, so the idea is that this system cannot be solved exactly. I cannot be written as a path integral exactly. But again, we're going to use what you seen yesterday, meaning that here you will have some normalization factor that can be obtained by using the fact that you want this equal 1, okay? And then you're going to use to look at the expansion in lambda of this object, okay? And for that, you want to work with, so this I call S of I. Now you're going to act with the derivative with respect to J of Z0 of J, okay? And then you will get Z of J as a power series expansion in lambda. And at this stage, okay, so you want to act with this operator on the one that you know for your other generating function for the harmonic oscillator. Then you get a power series expansion in lambda for this generating function of your system. So here you don't want to plug J to 0 now, okay, because then you want these to then act with derivative on it to get your 2-point function and et cetera, okay? And then, of course, you can see that the endpoint function of your perturbated system, of a perturbated theory, can still be written, will still be written in terms of the Green function of your unperturbated theory, of your harmonic oscillator in this case. This is the harmonic oscillator. And usually you will have kind of a complicated thing, but then the graphical representation of this expansion will, using these rules, okay, will lead to the Feynman diagram expansion of quantum mechanics and later on quantum field theory, okay? So the idea of that when you get an expansion in terms of Feynman diagram is that you have a system you cannot solve exactly. So for the generating functional, you use this expansion, and then you use this object to define your correlation function, so you act on it on this one with additional derivative, functional derivative with respect to J at different time, T1, T2, et cetera. Okay, so I'm stopping here. Tomorrow is the last lecture, so I will kind of do a summary of this quickly, and then we do some fermionic case. We have a tutorial this afternoon, and I will send you a quiz, the last one.